Welcome to Off the Chart with Medical Economics, a podcast featuring lively and informative conversations with healthcare experts, opinion leaders, and practicing physicians about the challenges facing doctors and medical practices today. I'm Jeff Bendix, Senior Editor of Medical Economics. The COVID-19 pandemic has been the biggest crisis to hit American healthcare in a century, resulting in more than 500,000 deaths and many thousands of hospitalizations. But like every crisis, this pandemic also opens up opportunities, including the possibility of improving healthcare delivery and outcomes for Americans of color and other traditionally underserved communities. To explore those possibilities in more detail, I'm joined today by Dr. Leon McDougall, president of the National Medical Association. The NMA is the nation's largest and oldest organization representing African American physicians and their patients. Dr. McDougall is a family physician and chief diversity officer for the Wexner Medical Center in Columbus, Ohio.
Thanks for joining us today, Dr. McDougall.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Let me start with some of the sort of larger picture questions. Black Americans traditionally have had less access to medical care, especially primary care, and worse outcomes than most other racial and ethnic groups. What are some of the reasons for those disparities, and why do they persist?
A good question. So one of the factors could be lack of access to medical providers based on lack of insurance coverage. Not only that, we also continue to advocate for increase in workforce diversity. So we know that when there is concordance among the patients and the doctors, healthcare providers, in regards to race and ethnicity and language, there are more opportunities to have a conversation and to negotiate treatment plans and preventive measures. And the patients are more likely to adhere to and agree to preventive measures such as flu shots, colonoscopies, and even COVID-19 vaccinations.
So would you say then that lack of insurance is at this point the biggest reason for those disparities in outcomes and access?
No, it's multifactorial. So one, let's take lessons learned from diagnostic testing. So the COVID-19 testing. So as you may remember, with the scarcity of diagnostic kits, there was a question algorithm that was put forth to help decide upon who was even going to get the diagnostic testing. And lo and behold, that testing somehow did not favor Black and brown people, the very same people who were experiencing the highest rates of death and illness. So you have the test before the test, the screen before the screen. So if one did happen to get by that part of the algorithm, then the diagnostic testing. So what did we see? We saw, and I'm sure you can vividly picture, a line of SUVs in order to receive a nasal swab. So what if you don't own an SUV? What if you don't own a car? So we've advocated for allowing walk-up testing at diagnostic testing sites. This was a part of the Rainbow Push Coalition, National Medical Association, National Bar Association, COVID-19 Public Health Manifesto that we published on April 15th. So not only health insurance, access is an issue, it's a major issue. So what do we say about walk-up opportunities for testing? And I would say the same for administering the COVID-19 vaccines, that they should be in locations within a 5-minute walk from public transportation. What's that's less than a fourth of a mile. Having the messaging given in a culturally sensitive, multilingual, tailored manner for that community. And oh yes, spending advertising dollars on Black and brown advertising firms. So those folks that are already engaged in multicultural communities, and that means also Black media engagement. So, and those are some of the factors I think that need to be addressed.
Do you think we're making progress with any of those?
Yes, I think we are making some progress. The National Medical Association is a founding member of the Black Coalition Against COVID, and that includes the Consortium of Four Black Medical Schools, Howard, Morehouse, Meharry, and Charles R. Drew, the National Urban League, the National Black Nurses Association, the W. Montague Cobb Health Institute, and BlackDoctor.org. And we've been building this coalition to include clergy leadership across the country, Black fraternities and sororities, and other professional organizations such as Lynx Incorporated and Jack and Jill, reaching the community, speaking to leaders in the community to help educate folks and have a conversation surrounding any concerns they may have in regards to the COVID-19 vaccine.
Okay. The pandemic seems to be changing many aspects of healthcare, particularly primary care delivery. Does that present an opportunity to improve that accessibility and overall health for Black Americans and other peoples of color?
So another good question. So now you're speaking to innovation, right? Before yes. The pandemic, we rarely used telehealth, video visits, telephone visits, and the like. Now is, I know half of my clinic time is virtual.
Really?
And that provides opportunities to overcome some of the transportation barriers that may be present, lack of having someone to accompany you to a visit. And so now it's kind of a mixture between virtual visits and then coming in for in-person visits when needed. So that's a convenience measure that should help with compliance with various follow-up of chronic ailments. So that's one major innovation. So we would hope that the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid would continue to fund that type of care because it is improving access and should also be improving outcomes.
Do you find in your own practice that you are seeing people that you hadn't seen before because they hadn't been able to come in or are you seeing them more often?
So the follow-up, it can be more often. I serve on the Near East Side of Columbus, Ohio. It's a mostly African-American community. And with the patient population that I see, they're older and more complexity, and having the ability to say, well, let me follow up with you next week on that or in 2 weeks on that particular issue because I have concerns, versus what you would normally have someone come back in a month or 2 months and things. So it gives us more options for virtual follow-up concerning the changing health status of a patient.
And telehealth seems particularly well-suited to helping with treatment and monitoring of people with chronic diseases, correct? Of people with diabetes.
So now one issue to bring up, though, is affordability of broadband. Some of our inner cities, the expense for broadband is higher than it is in the suburbs. So I think whatever legislation needs to occur to help lower those expenses would be greatly appreciated. most of my patients, they're talking with me on the cell phone or perhaps their laptop computer. And then the other portion, we're having a telephone conversation because for some reason or another, it just doesn't work. And it's just easier to talk on the telephone. But I have the medical record in front of me and can update and talk about various healthcare maintenance issues and so on.
Healthcare exchanges have been reopened for 90 days, I believe, so people can enroll in the Affordable Care Act exchanges. Do you think that's going to help as well?
Yes, that will help because, as you know, many people have lost their employer-based insurance. And even folks who were entrepreneurs or in the arts, their income has been greatly impacted. And from what I'm reading on the Affordable Care Act, that people can qualify for plans that the premium may be $75 per month or so. In the scheme of things, that's much more affordable than what we typically see for premiums for insurance. So being able to join that network to lower expense and provide health care access, I think is a wonderful thing.
What are some other specific policy changes that the NMA would like to see enacted as a result of the pandemic? Let's put it another way, how can we make sure this crisis doesn't go to waste?
Well, now you just asked a big question, and it's so it that involves a big answer. So we talked about universal health insurance. Right now, the Affordable Care Act, it needs to be expanded, and those costs associated with obtaining the Affordable Care Act lessened to the point where it doesn't become a barrier for people receiving health insurance. So that's one. And then another would be education and policy change. One we're working on right now is the amount of sodium that's in food. That high sodium content is like a mist that's going around and killing people. And if there was a policy that actually had guidelines for the food industry to limit the sodium that's put in these microwave dinners, just the whole plethora of food items, that would go a long way. Dr. Jackson T. Wright, Professor Emeritus at Case Western Reserve, he just wrote an article speaking to this very issue. And for the Black community, African-American community, cardiovascular disease and hypertension and stroke are those illnesses that are driving that gap in life expectancy when comparing the African-American community to the European-American community. So that's one of those issues that is really big, our diet. And so in making systemic changes in regards to the food we eat from a regulatory standpoint. So that's another one. And then in regards to surprise medical bills. So going to see your healthcare provider or being admitted to a hospital and you're thinking that the insurance is covering most things and then you get this big several thousand dollar bill. And then the high cost of insulin. For some reason, some unknown reason other than perhaps profit margin, the price of insulin keeps going up. And as you know, the percentage of people in the population who have diabetes is going up because of increased in obesity. So companies are going in and buying pharmaceutical manufacturers that have a portfolio of generic medications. And then it's almost like, okay, I bought up this company with making this less expensive generic medication that doesn't have a patent, but I'm the only person making this. So I'm going to raise the price up as high as the market will tolerate. That happened to the EpiPen. Remember that? The epinephrine. All of a sudden, somebody got some wise idea that they want to be a billionaire probably, because I have the market. and then just from a profit margin motivation, raise the price of life-saving epinephrine. So, but these are two examples of how profit and greed have made the well-being of people with diabetes and allergies has really put them to task in regards to being able to maintain health and well-being.
I want to turn to back to COVID-19 for a minute. The Black Americans have shown more hesitancy than other groups to get vaccinated for a variety of reasons. Is the National Medical Association and Black healthcare providers working to overcome that hesitancy? And if so, how?
Another good question. This is a continuation of an earlier answer. So speaking to the Black Coalition Against COVID, we've been conducting town hall meetings and having a conversation with the Black community, speaking to their concerns, answering questions that people may have. So it's not a top-down, I'm the doctor, this is what you should do. It's more of a conversation about, well, we've reviewed the studies, we've looked at the data, and we see that it is a safe and effective vaccine, and we support the Food and Drug Administration emergency use authorization. And in fact, African Americans have been involved in aspects of the research, going to Dr. Kazmekia Corbett, who was the lead virology researcher on messenger RNA. So she is one that developed the platform for messenger RNA vaccine. A lot of people are very surprised to learn that. And then we have folks like Dr. James Hildreth, president of Meharry Medical College, who is on the oversight committee for the Food and Drug Administration. And then there's the National Medical Association Task Force on COVID-19 Vaccines and Therapeutics. We've been meeting with Pfizer. We've been meeting with scientists from Moderna. We're meeting with Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, and Novavax. So we're taking an independent, nonpartisan view of the data. And we did release a statement on Pfizer and Moderna vaccines on December 15th, supporting the FDA emergency use authorization. So it's a ground game. We're building this coalition to include clergy, professional organizations, Black media, and the like.
Do you have any suggestions for how healthcare providers who are not Black can persuade their Black patients to get vaccinated?
So again, the term would be having a conversation, not necessarily persuade, answering questions. I've listed some resources that they may find very helpful: the advisory statement from the National Medical Association, the Black Coalition Against COVID website, and all the resources listed there. And so having that conversation, I'm on the wait list now to get my COVID-19 vaccine. So also being one to walk the talk and having that conversation, I think, is critical.
So communication, dialogue.
Yes.
Are there any other aspects of how COVID-19 relates to healthcare inequities that we haven't discussed that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I think another major issue would be collection of race ethnicity data in regards to health in general. I know when COVID-19 was emerging as a threat to the United States, the data collected across the nation was not adequate and did not include race and ethnicity. What was mostly available was gender and age, and there are still a lot of gaps in this data collection throughout the U.S., and I think there's only 4 to 6 states that are collecting COVID-19 transmission rates, COVID-19 hospitalizations, and deaths disaggregated by race and ethnicity. So we need to build that information network and infrastructure, not only to help with this pandemic, but to help thwart any future pandemic that may arise.
Why is it important to have this race-based data?
So we wouldn't know that Black people are dying nearly 3 times the rate of European Americans. We wouldn't know that Black people are being hospitalized nearly 4 times the rate of European Americans. And similar data can be described when speaking to the Hispanic, Latinx, and indigenous tribal communities. Data is important. Data allows us to focus resources, and data allows us to know that the efforts that have been undertaken are advancing health equity.
And just to be clear, the federal government is not requiring that at this point. Is that right?
So in regards to data collection, it's not uniform. So it's an opportunity for the Centers for Disease Control, for HHS, Health and Human Services, and other federal agencies to work with the state and local populations. And there may need to be some standards set in regards to collection of data as it pertains to the communities involved to allow us to further and more smartly address any disparate out at that data.
Well, great. That covers the areas that I wanted to ask you about. Thank you very much for your time. This has been very helpful.
All right. Thanks for reaching out to me.
Thanks for listening. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And be sure to visit our website at medicaleconomics.com, where you'll find all the latest news about the business of healthcare. We hope you'll listen next month for a new episode of Off the Chart with Medical Economics.